Yesterday we spoke from some verses spoken by Lord Kapila Dev, and I thought to continue. There's a very nice verse with a long purport that follows what we discussed yesterday. And for those of you that weren't with us yesterday, especially one verse we spent a lot of time on, a verse that's almost identical with a verse that's in the first canto, chapter 2. Who remembers? Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam, then it has a different ending. Gyanam Chayadahaitukam and Gyanam Tad Samadarshanam. Is that right? No. Gyanam Yad Brahmadarshanam. So the next verse, that verse echoes or reverberates the same message as the essence of the whole, all of the Vedas. That was the question of the sages to Sutta Goswami, and that was his answer. Devotional service to Krishna, bhakti yoga unto Vasudev, is the essence of the message of all the Vedas. And that devotional service brings forth from the soul, causelessly, no separate endeavor necessary, transcendental knowledge and detachment arise. Just as a subset or a part of a component of devotional service. So now I'm going to do a little Srimad Bhagavatam quiz question. Ready for a quiz question? There are two verses in the first canto that are, by different acharyas, they're referred to as the Mahavakya, or the principal utterance of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, one more commonly than the other. What is that verse? Do you know? Which I can't hear you. A little louder?
I just know the important line.
Okay. What's the important line? That's right. Krishna's two Bhagavan. What does that mean? I don't know. What does it mean?
Krishna is the source of all.
Everything. All incarnations. Everything spiritual. Everything material. Everything. He's the source of everything. Specifically, it's that verse is in a list of avatars, and Krishna is the source of all avatars. Amongst all that list of avatars, Krishna is the source of all of them. That's what the verse means. So, how it works is, this is very early in the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3. So, all the verses that follow, all the 18,000 minus a few other 17,000 verses, whatever it is, the rest of the whole Bhagavatam is to be understood in light of that one verse. Meaning, something later comes. How do I understand this? You look back at the principal one. and it's helping to shed light upon and illustrate and amplify that upon which the whole Bhagavatam rests. Krishna is the original source of everything, because Vedanta, the end of all knowledge, asks the question, what is the source of everything? The source of everything is the Absolute Truth. All other truths are resting upon the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Absolute Truth. The truth is revealed. Krishna is that Absolute Truth. So there's another verse that's also in First Canto, Chapter 3. It doesn't have the exact same significance as that Ete Chang Sakala Pung Sang Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. How did you remember that one? You have a good memory. So maybe you remember this next one. But if you hear it today, then you'll know it for tomorrow, right? Okay. So there's another verse. I'll give some hints. The other verse describes that Absolute Truth, Krishna, is of the absolute nature. The Sanskrit word is advayam. There's dvaita and advaita. Dualism and non-dualism. Everything of the spiritual world is non-dual. Advayam. And that non-dual substance is realized in three different features. That's that dead giveaway. You should know what the verse is by now. That's how it ends. How does it start? Vedanta tat. Tattvavidvas. Tattvavid. Those who know the truth of Vedanta. Tattvam yajjnanam advayam. They know this non-dual substance has three different features. Brahman, Paramatman, and Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdiyate. That's the verse. So the Absolute Truth, which the other verse indicated, that's Krishna, has been explained by the learned Vedantists, those who know the conclusion of the Vedas, which Sutta Goswami has already revealed, that's Krishna, who is to be understood through devotional service. That's realized in three different features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. All three of them are of the same non-dual nature. So what does that mean, non-dual? You want to offer the answer? So non-dual means?
There's no, like, the wild things, there's no thing that's equally as, so if there's something really good, then nothing that is equally as bad as it.
Okay.
Like, if you have happiness, then there's something equally, like, temporary happiness.
The opposite of it.
Bad is,
okay.
Like, distress.
The world of opposites.
Yeah. So there's no opposite.
Yeah.
Like in the spiritual world, there's no, like,
everything is absolute. Yeah. Although there's variegatedness, everything is absolute. In this realm, there's variegatedness, but it's not absolute. It was a little while ago, it was light out, and now it's becoming dark. And when there's dark, there's the absence of light, and when there's a light, there's the absence of darkness. Happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, light and dark, up and down, whatever you can think of, there's an opposite of it. In this realm, that's the realm of duality. And in the spiritual realm, it's the realm of absolute. I won't get too philosophical, but the process of jnana or knowledge says, well, the realm of that which is absolute must be minus what's here. So here we have duality, so there must be no duality. Here we have personality, there must be no personality. Here we have variety, there must be no variety. Here we have form, there must be no form. Definition by negation. Prabhupada said this is like the flip side of the same coin. Heads or tails. Well, if it's not heads, then it's tails. Because it's not heads, it's tails. It's the opposite. The process is called, by gyan, it's called na iti, or neti neti. What is Brahman? It's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. What is it? It's not this. Definition by negation. And that's an aspect in that transcendental feature of the absolute truth. Here is temporality, everything is temporary, and there everything is eternal. Here everything is, now you see it, now you don't, and there everything is eternally manifest. It's all pervasive existence, sat. That sat feature, now going back to the verse that we discussed yesterday, one of the verses we discussed yesterday was Brahma Darshanam. Remember? Janayati Aishu Vairagyam Jnanam Yad Brahma Darshanam. By devotional service, you can have Brahma Darshanam. You have vision or darshan of the absolute truth. So one feature of the absolute truth is Brahman. But then there's Paramatma, and then there's Bhagavan. And so the verse that we're going to be discussing this evening says that. There are two verses in between, which we also covered briefly yesterday. In that state of spiritual realization, there's a description by Kapila Dev what happens with the mind, what happens with the intelligence. Because we use both all the time. But we rely on the absolute Brahman, and we're not relying upon the mind and the intelligence. We use them, but they're not the instrument of realization. And that what it said about the mind is the mind is not making a distinction between something that's favorable and unfavorable, something that's auspicious and inauspicious, because that's in duality. Light and dark, wet and dry, cold and hot, happy and sad, auspicious, inauspicious. In the transcendental realm, the mind does not see that way, and the intelligence, because of his transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision. Like Dira. They're undisturbed by this or that. Duality is not affecting them. So now in that non-dual state, here we go. Here's this evening's verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is complete knowledge. But according to the different processes of understanding, he appears differently, either as impersonal Brahman, as Paramatma, or as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or as the Purusha avatar. So you got three choices just expanded into four. Because the Purusha avatar is in the same category as Supersoul. In fact, Supersoul is one of the Purusha avatars. So, it's a long purport, and long purports are nice for the morning and maybe too fatiguing for the evening. So, won't read all the long, nice long purport, but I'll just cover some of the points in that purport. Prabhupada gets right to the point and says, referring back to the previous three verses ago, Bhakti Yoga, Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojataha. So Bhakti Yoga is needed to get any one of these three realizations, or four realizations if you add the Purusha avatars. Mentioning of the Purusha avatars is something that he goes back to this chapter earlier, where Kapila Dev speaks to Devahuti about Hiranya Garbha worship. That's Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. Hiranya means golden, just like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranya Garbha. Garbha means egg. So the universes are like a golden egg, and the form of Vishnu enters into that universe as Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, makes the egg like material energy glow golden because of his presence. Just like the body of a human being has luster because of the presence of the soul. And if someone is very, very, very happy, they look, as Prabhupada would say, bright-faced. And if someone is in a unhappy, sad condition, they look very, their luster goes down. So Hiranyagarbha worship is a form of worship, and yogis like that. But the yogi, if he's going to do worship of Hiranyagarbha or the Purusha avatars, much like the verses, the Purusha Sukta prayers in from the Rig Veda, that's Hiranyagarbha worship through those prayers. And there's commentary, there's an explanation of those verses in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. It explains them. The Purusha Sukta prayers from Rig Veda. It's far out. It's commentary on those verses from Rig Veda. And it's in connection with the process of creation. So it's described. Because that's what the Purusha avatars do. They bring the creation into being through the agency of Lord Brahma, but Mahavishnu, Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, Shira Dakshai Vishnu. They bring creation into being. And those that are created, they may worship the Purusha avatars that bring them into being, knowing they're worshipping the Supreme Father who has brought me into existence. It's very nice. So the point that Prabhupada is amplifying in the purport is each of the Bhakti Yoga must be there to get any realization. And there are Bhakti Yoga practitioners that, where there's Gyan Mishra Bhakti, devotion that's mixed with speculative knowledge tendency. Those are the persons who realize the super soul, realize the Purusha avatar. Excuse me. Those are the speculative tendency. Excuse me. They realize Brahman. Let me just read what Prabhupada writes here. It's very interesting. Where does he say it? Thank you. Well, I can't find it right now. He says that by the process of Gyan Yoga, they desire to merge into Brahman. But they can't merge into Brahman unless it's tinged with devotional service. So there must be, to be tinged with devotional service, there must be some kind of personal conception, otherwise you don't have devotional service. So those are persons that worship with the idea that the goal of this worship is to merge. You follow? It's just something anecdotal that explains this. I don't know, 15 years ago, I was visiting an Ayurvedic doctor in Bombay, and there was a devotee, Chaitanya Balab, who was helping me, you know, get back and forth to the clinic and so on. And his wife was really into yoga. She was, every time she saw me, oh, you should go see the yoga teacher, he'll help you with your health. And they were, you know, I wasn't interested. But she was insisting, and they're being so helpful. So I finally shrugged my shoulders and said, okay, I'll go. So a long car ride, you know, getting sick with all the fumes in Bombay to get to the place. And we got to the place, and it was a little removed from the city. There was a huge, gigantic banyan tree. So, because the banyan tree was so huge, there wasn't buildings all over the place. It was peaceful, a little bit, and quiet, a little bit. And so I went inside. So I was, you know, wearing my saffron cloth, and apparently they had been prepared that, you know, a sannyasi is going to come. And so the yoga students all got up and, you know, paid respect. And then the teacher gestured to one and said, I had a heart problem, and every doctor I went to said I had to have surgery, but I didn't want to have surgery, and they kept saying I had to have surgery, and finally I came here and I'm cured and I don't have to have surgery. And then another one, you know, something else. My health is great because I'm doing yoga. So that was like an advertisement to get me to do yoga. I just gave them one of those and smiled. And so then the teacher pulled me to the side and pointed to a little wooden chair. It wasn't even an altar, it was just a wooden chair. And leaning up against the back of the wooden chair was a print of the universal form. It wasn't even a painting, just, you know, poster kind of a print thing. And he pulled me to the side and said, you see that? The real story is, it's just imagination. This is for all those people, I'm sure you understand this because you're a sannyasi. All those people, they pay their respects to this picture before they do the yoga, but actually it's the unborn behind the form that's the goal. He was going like that, and I was going like that. Let me out of here. And that's the program that people are introduced to, it, either implicitly or explicitly. That's the program. And the Prabhupada is stating it. I wish I could find it, but it's not jumping off the page. Those who want to merge with Brahman are not entitled to do so unless there's some coating of bhakti. To get that realization, there must be bhakti yoga. And going back to an earlier section in this chapter, where the Hiranyagarbha worshippers and their destination is the abode of Lord Vishnu, they're meditating, and in their meditation they're worshipping the Paramatma feature to attain the abode of the Purusha avatars. It must be tinged with bhakti. Otherwise they don't get that destination, they don't get that realization. what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, the personal feature of the Absolute Truth, it requires not only bhakti yoga, but unmixed bhakti yoga, unmixed with jnana and karma. Now, we're very fortunate. We're in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the chief follower of whom was Rupa Goswami, who made it so clear. Anyabhilashatushunyam jnana karma jadavritam. We don't have to go through lifetimes and lifetimes of reading and scratching our head and trying to figure it out and doing so many things. It's just handed to us. Here it is. We're so fortunate. We're so fortunate that we're like spoiled kids. We don't realize how fortunate that gift is that we've been given. So here it is in its form before Rupa Goswami has simplified it for us so much. So the first paragraph Prabhupada is saying, Brahman realization requires bhakti yoga, Paramatma realization requires bhakti yoga, personal realization requires bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is required. By executing jnana yoga and dhyana yoga, one has to eventually approach the bhakti yoga platform. And then Paramatma, Ishwara, Puman, etc. These are terms in the verse indicating the Supreme Person, are all clearly understood. It is recommended in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Here's another quiz question. I'm going to ask you, which verse is this? It is recommended in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that whether one is a devotee or a fruitive actor or a liberationist, if he is intelligent enough, he should engage himself with all seriousness in the process of devotional service. What's that verse? Yeah. So, the first three options are akama, having no material desire. Sarvakama, having all material desire. Mokshakama, desiring liberation. Tivrena bhakti yogena, very tivra, very strong, intense, undivided bhakti yogena. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. The Purusham Param, the Supreme Person, should be worshipped by Bhakti Yoga, regardless of your position. All material desire, no material desire, wanting liberation. Engage in devotional service. It is also explained that whatever one desires, which is obtainable by fruitive activities, even if he wants to be elevated to higher planets, can be achieved simply by execution of devotional service. And Prabhupada says it again later. If you're a devotee and you want to, there's scriptural quotes. It's from the 11th canto. Krishna's teaching to Uddhava. A devotee, who knows why a devotee would want to go to that Swargaloka, but if a devotee wants to go to Swargaloka, Krishna says to Uddhava, I very easily award that. If a devotee wants to enter into Brahman, why would a devotee want it? But if a devotee wants to enter into Brahman, a mixed devotee, I can easily award that. If a devotee wants to come to my abode, I can easily award that. And so his message to Uddhava is, who needs anything else? Who needs anything else? Just engage in my devotional service. And that's what's being said here. But the other side, the realizations, those three, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, they're achieved according to the process that one follows, but those processes must be involved with or incorporate to some degree devotional service. And the personality of Godhead is the complete realization from unmixed devotional service. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, if one takes the devotional service and at the same time desires to merge into the existence of the Supreme Lord, he can achieve that. Then he writes, this is the phrase, if one desires at all to merge into the existence of the Supreme, he has to execute devotional service. That may sound not, that's not fair. I'm an impersonalist and I want to merge and I don't want to have anything to do with Krishna. I just want to merge. Well, you have to have something to do with Krishna. You can't. So therefore you get like these other people. They have this, in this case it was the universal form, but they could have some other, and that's what Shankaracharya says. You know, hold your ears because it's poison, it's impersonalism, but he says, if you like to worship, go ahead. Pancha Upasana. There's five. And some, you just, you know, take anything off the shelf that you like. Just worship something. Whatever you like. Yata matta tupat, it's fine. And because really what's important is behind the worship is the impersonal. That's the worship that's impersonal in intention. So, but there has to be the worship of Krishna to get that destination, is what Prabhupada is saying here. Then listen, this is a little subtle. Oh, the people in the kitchen thought I was yelling at them. impersonal Brahman, being formless, is described as adrishya. Adrishya, it's adrishya and adrishya, seen and unseen. Impersonal, because it's formless, is unseen. Because the impersonal effulgence of Brahma Jyoti covers the face of the Supreme Lord. What's that verse from Ishopanishad? Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham. Mukha means face. Please remove your dazzling effulgence, Hiranmaya. Please remove your Hiranmaya, because it's covering your face. Please remove that effulgence so I can see your form, your face, your transcendental form. Some yogis see the four-handed Vishnu sitting within the heart, and therefore, in their case, also the Supreme Lord is invisible. That means the Bhagavan feature. Fascinated by the effulgence, fascinated by the Lord in the heart feature, they're not seeing Bhagavan. But one can see Bhagavan even within the heart through bhakti, or even more specifically through the premanjana, the ointment, anjana, the ointment of prema smeared upon the eyes. Then one can see Krishna, Bhagavan, not just Paramatma, but Bhagavan, within every living being. That's very special. But it's the price, or the process, is unalloyed devotion. That's the teaching of the Bhagavatam. And less than unalloyed devotion leads to a different attainment. Even it may be a transcendental attainment through mixed devotional service. The advocacy of Kapila Dev to Devahuti is unmixed devotional service, please. My dear mother. And actually he's instructing us, because he knows that his mother is already there. She's already the mother of the personality of Godhead. She's already pure. Then he goes on just at the end. He says the same understanding, that is, Brahman is invisible, Paramatma is invisible, at least, you know, the absolute truth and fullness is still invisible. Only Bhagavan is visible. Going back to the previous verse, Yad Brahma Darshanam, by devotional service, you can see the personality of Godhead. He says this is confirmed in Vishnu Purana. So then we can read, this is just the end of the purport. The Vishnu Purana states, I'll go back up. In the Vishnu Purana, this fact is very nicely explained. The universal form of the Lord and the formless Brahman effulgence of the Lord being invisible are inferior features. The concept of the universal form is material, and the concept of impersonal Brahman is spiritual. But the highest spiritual understanding is the personality of Godhead. Here's what Vishnu Purana says. Vishnur Brahma Swarupena. Vishnu is the Swarup of Brahman. Swayam Eva Yavastitaha. Brahman's real feature is Vishnu, or the Supreme Brahman is Vishnu, Brahman and Parabrahman. And the form is supreme, and impersonal is not yet complete, partial realization of the Absolute. Svayameva, in this verse, indicates his personal feature. The supreme spiritual conception is the personality of Godhead. And he just quotes Bhagavad Gita. It says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. Yad gatva na nivartante tadama paramam mama. Once you go to that abode, that's my abode, it's eternal. It's not material. It's not created, destroyed. And once you go there, you stay there. Having obtained my realm, you don't come back again. That specific abode is called Parama Mama. The place from which once one attains it, one does not return to this miserable conditional life. Every place, every space, and everything belongs to Vishnu. But where he personally lives is Tadama Paramam, his supreme abode. One has to make one's destination the supreme abode of the Lord. End of purport. About 5 days ago, something like that, I was at MIT for a college program. They have a club there. Nice attendance, really cerebral student audience. And their questions are, you know, thoughtful. They're thoughtful people. So we had this interaction for some part of the gathering of an aspiring spiritualist, MIT student, who was taking the position, arguing, that you don't have to have a goal. Because his experience, he said, is the goal, it reveals itself in the course of the unfolding of life. So I'm not sure it's correct. He was being polite, right, in saying it's, I'm not sure it's correct to say that it's necessary that you, before you undertake your spiritual journey, you should have a goal. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because Prabhupada is making it very clear. The goal is required. The goal should be the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the means to get there is devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you don't have a clear sense of goal, how are you going to get there? So one of the responses I gave, I gave some philosophical ones, but there were some practical ones, and he got the practical ones more than the philosophical ones. So I had a friend when I was in college that had a little sports car, and he liked to go for rides. And I asked him one time, when you go for a ride, where do you, you know, what do you do? He said, I just go and drive. When you're driving, you have an intention to go somewhere, to a park or to a mountain or see a friend, or, you know, I just drive. And I said, well, you know, I hope you find your destination. Then I said, when I was little, there was this little nursery rhyme. These the Americans, you'll know this one. Row, row, row your boat. From India, you know it too. Do you know that one? You heard it?
Yeah.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. You know that one? Well, it does, nothing matters. What's life? Life is a journey. Journey to where? It doesn't matter where, just row your boat. So, two things, and I'll end. Something that I heard Prabhupada say very early as a devotee, very different than row, row, row your boat. Prabhupada said, in order, when you have a clear sense of goal, it's very easy to make steps towards that goal. If you don't have a clear sense of goal, it's very difficult to be firm in your determination to take the steps. It wasn't so. There's fruitive goals that people create for themselves, but there's spiritual goals that are for everybody. And then once you know what the goal is, you can, according to your capacity, you can take steps towards that goal. And by making steps towards that goal, you'll eventually get there. We had this nice experience. Two or three summers ago, it was in Seattle. We had this plan. It didn't work out so well, but we wanted to make an arrangement for persons who were contributing to help the ISKCON. We wanted to have a gathering where those persons could spend time, personal time, with some of our leaders. We got some of our leaders to come, and those people came, and Harivilas had this idea that we would go to a place that's in the northwest corner. Were you there for that? Northwest corner of the state of Washington, where it's supposed to be 360 days of the year sunny. Then when we went there, it rained. And but we stayed in little cabins and, you know, cooked under a tent because it was raining. And then it was time for, so the rain stopped, it was time for a walk. And the walk area, there were different places to walk, and we decided to walk on a piece of land that it's just wide enough for one person to walk. It's not even wide enough for two people to walk, or you fall into the ocean. And it's about 3 miles long. It doesn't have a nice name. It's called the Spit. The something or other Spit. But it's describing a piece of land. As opposed to a peninsula, it's just very narrow and curved. And off in a distance, it looked like a mountain rising out of the ocean. And I asked, what's that? And they said, that's Vancouver. Because it's where that part of the geography, you can't, so it's the southern tip of Vancouver, Vancouver Island or something like that, and you can see a mountain off in the distance. And so at the end of that protrusion of land was a lighthouse. So that was like the goal. Go this whole long distance, and Bhakti Mark Swami was with us, so he was, you know, no problem. Go for a long walk. He was walking and walking, and little kids were trying to keep up with Bhakti Mark Swami, and they were doing a pretty good job. So the image was, it was during the day, but supposing it was at night, and it's dark, because that's what lighthouses are for. It's off in a distance, and just, you don't know exactly, you know, where's the land and where's the water, but just follow the light. You keep following the light and keep following the light and keep following the light and you get there. Just follow the light. If there's a simile, if there's a clear sense of goal, just continue to pursue the goal. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanya gamino is Krishna's language of Bhagavad Gita. Continue to practice. Like chanting. Somebody was asking the other day, how do this, it was Bhakti Priya was asking to chant this one mantra at a time, how do you do that? Abhyasa, you keep practicing this mantra, okay, and then the next this mantra, the next this mantra, and just keep practicing and practicing and practicing. Follow the goal. If the goal is, in this case, rapt attention in the holy name, just keep practicing it. It's something like, from Nectar Devotion explanation, like the walking capacity in a child, because it's innate. By practicing and practicing and practicing, that which is within comes out. It's already there, just needs to be developed. Our attraction for Krishna is already there. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Not just Krishna is within, but love for Krishna is within. And it can be brought out by sadhana, by practice. Doing activity in devotion to Krishna, it comes out. So goal is required. And if we keep before us, we have a clear sense of very well defined, I mean, the Bhagavatam gives it left, front, and left, right, and sideways, and up and down, and backwards and forwards. You know, it's very clear. This is the goal, here's the means to the goal. And we're lazy. Or, you know, if it hurts, if we're feeling a pinch, ouch, then we pay more attention. And otherwise, I'm okay, you're okay. Complacency. So, to be successful in spiritual life, better to not have the pinch, better to have an inspiration from within to reach the goal. Because that's what life is meant for. That's our purpose. To revive our relationship with Krishna. And the last thing, this anecdotal, when, because it came out in this discussion with the MIT students, someone asked that, you know, the classical human interest question, how did you started with something else, how did you get into this question? How do you, you know, what's your story of how you got involved in Krishna consciousness? That question. That's always a fantastic question to hear people describe how they started Krishna consciousness. So rather than making it a long story, I'll make it really short. But I was on a track of becoming a medical doctor. I was accepted at medical school, and the United States government was sending notices to my parents' home that I was to show up and get my army uniform and get flown off to Vietnam and fight in Vietnam while I was enrolled in medical school. And, you know, That didn't make any sense. Why would they do something like that? I mean, there's lots of people, but why take somebody that's going to become a doctor and have them go do something stupid like that? So I just didn't pay attention to it, and the notices kept coming and kept coming, and finally my father said, "You got to do something." Okay, I'll do something. And it's a long, to try to make it quick. Some friends advised, there are Quakers, and the Quakers will teach you, they'll guide you in how to fill out a conscientious objector form that says they'll change your draft status from 1A to something else. So I said, okay, I'll find out what that's all about. And they gave me a form, and the first question on the form, conscientious objector form to get out of the draft, says, state the nature of your belief in God such that you cannot fight for the armed forces of the United States of America. So, being a Dean's List student, I know how to get A's in exams and can answer that question and get an A. But when I started to write, I didn't know what my own convictions were in God. I mean, I had some idea, but... So rather than fudge it and fake it, I wanted to find out. I said, if I don't know what my convictions are, then where am I going to have time to find out what my convictions are? Because I know what medical school is like, and I know what internship and residency is like, and I know what practice is like. You know, just watching him doing what he does. You're on the conveyor belt. And I don't want to be at the end of the conveyor belt, you know, an old man, and not have the answer to that question, because I didn't take the time out to get the answer to that question. So I'm doing a time out. And once I started asking that question, then there were 100 other questions, related questions, like, what's it all about? And what are we supposed to do with this thing, the human form of life? What's its purpose? And I don't know. And I feel really uncomfortable that I don't know. You know, I'm doing all these things I'm supposed to do and getting, you know, succeeding, and I don't even know what the purpose of it all is. Something's wrong with that picture. I'm getting off this conveyor belt for a bit and find out what the answer is. So the anecdotal part is, I met somebody like that. I was in a train riding from New York City to Lewistown, Pennsylvania, on my way to Gita Nagari. And on an aisle seat, and right across the aisle was a retired doctor. And he was exactly like that. He was at the end of the conveyor belt, and he didn't have a clue. Nice man. You know, mode of goodness man. But he didn't have a clue. And I could say some of the things or elements of the conversation. But I felt very sad. Here's a very intelligent man, pious man, didn't have a clue. And he didn't have a clue that he didn't have a clue. Because he never asked the question. He was reading a book, and he was like lonely, so he wanted to talk. So on the aisle, across the aisle, started talking about, you know how this train, railroad track was built? I'm reading a book about it. Here's how it was built. And he went on and on and on about how it was built. And, you know, the immigrants and the American Indians and the whole, and on and on. And then, he changed the conversation because I wasn't too interested in all of that. And he said, are you part of some religion? And I said, yes. Then he didn't really want to find anything about the religion. He just went on about, when I was young, I was an atheist. And then I married a woman who was a Catholic. So I said, okay, I'll become a Catholic. We went to the... Just on and on and on and on and on. And then something and then something. And, not having a clue. Yeah, I'm going to visit my children. because you know I did my practice. He was a surgeon, heart surgeon in New York City, and now they live in Pittsburgh or somewhere out there. And he was going out to visit them, and they really like football, and it was all over the universe. Anything but reality. It's so sad because you know here's an intelligent, pious person that just. I said, that could have been me. But somebody came along and tapped me on the shoulder. You know, fortunately, I was ready to receive the tap on the shoulder and say, you know, instead of saying, buzz off. Because I was searching, but, you know, through some association with devotees. And even the association with devotees, I shared this with them. I wasn't looking for the association of devotees. Krishna sent them. It was really, really just amazing. So I was expressing the unfolding of events certainly takes place, but there has to be, for spiritual progress to really take shape, and what the goal is become clearer to you and clearer to you as it is 40 some years after I began. It's becoming clearer and clearer. He said, oh really? I said, yeah, really. It's not stagnant. My idea when I started is has undergone so many evolutions and transformations of clarity of what the goal is. But they have to have some type of goal. Otherwise, it's row, row, row your boat. And you'll end up, you know, I didn't use that example, but this, you know, very nice, pious doctor that didn't have a clue. And what's going to happen when he acts at the end? Who knows? Destination unknown. Very sad. There's so many people. What to do? The Bhagavatam asks that question. The sages of Naimisharanya, as we discussed last night, what to do? It's the age of Kali. It's very difficult. What to do? Do something. But what's that something? So the something, here's in a very simple form, here's the something. Receive the good fortune of the association of saintly person, Srila Prabhupada and his wonderful teachings, and his followers, and the process of devotional service. Receive it and give it to others as your capacity permits. Is a service as that do something for others. Use this body, use that whatever the gifts are that Krishna has given you in service to others. And create a society, a community of persons that live according to those instructions that that great personality taught. This is some of you may know Rukmini Mataji, Nuttama's wife Rukmini, very wonderful Vaishnavi. She wrote to me last week and said, where is this from? The way to honor a great person is not by creating a statue of that person or naming a building after that person, but creating a society of individuals that exemplify the teachings of that great personality. Prabhupada said that in relation to Mahatma Gandhi on the occasion of his memorial service, because Prabhupada previously was a very prominent follower of Gandhi, and then he became a follower of Bhaktisiddhanta. So on the occasion of the demise of Mahatma Gandhi, his message was, rather than building a Mahatma Gandhi statue or Mahatma Gandhi Marg, name a street after him or name a building after him, create a society that exemplifies the teachings of that great personality. And then he went on to say that everyone knows that Gandhi was a deep believer in Bhagavad Gita. So then let us create a place called Gita Nagari, and he named it. And it would have these components. And he described in detail in Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada in his earlier Bhagavad Gita, Back to Godhead publications, published it. He wrote an essay that was like a paper that he delivered on that occasion. And he described, but later in ISKCON we call that the Gita Nagari prophecy. And when Prabhupada was going to visit there in 1977, prior to that it was called the New York Farm, but Prabhupada then gave it the name Gita Nagari. And we didn't know at the time the connection between that essay that he wrote in whatever it was, 1961. I think that's the year that Gandhi died. And here it was, 1976, and Prabhupada was calling it Gita Nagari. He had a vision of what he wanted, and his followers carry out that vision. That's a goal. So it's very simply receive and then give. In one lecture, I'm trying to end, but I did all these nice things. One summer in New York, I think it was 1971, 72, Prabhupada was speaking in a very humble way. He said, my spiritual master found me in some dark place, and he made me fortunate. And his voice was trembling when he spoke. And then my spiritual master said to me, now that you have become fortunate, you go and make others fortunate. Everyone went, Jai Prabhupada! And so I have come to your country, and I found you in some dark place. And I have made your lives fortunate. Jai Prabhupada! And then you know what the rest was. And now I am requesting you. You go forward and make others fortunate. Jai Prabhupada! Everyone was bouncing off the walls and the ceiling. That's our life. Receive and give. It's called the loving exchange. Receive and you give. On the order of you give. In the order of and the mercy of you receive. And the message is very clear. The goal is very clear. The means are very clear. You just have to open our hearts and receive it and then give it. It's most wonderful. Okay, so I'll end. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the wonderful class. As you just mentioned, that one needs to have a defined goal in life. In spiritual life, there is variegatedness. As far as I was reading the Brahad Bhagavatam, and the second part, when Gop Kumar travels to the spiritual world, he goes through so many realms, and in spite of going through Ayodhya, Dwarika, that love that he experienced in Vrindavan, that Prajvasi, that special love that he had for Krishna and Krishna for him. Despite, he is still in the spiritual world and there is many realms, he cannot experience the same and relish the same sweetness. So then the defined goal that one has to aspire for, should it be always the supreme utmost abode, or...
He didn't have any sense of supreme utmost abode. He didn't have a sense of that. He had a... There were two things, primarily. He had an undefined feeling. And the other, so wherever he was, that undefined feeling was unfulfilled. The undefined, so he didn't know. When he began his mantra chanting, as you know, because you've read the part two, his spiritual master didn't tell him anything. Should he chant it aloud or softly, silently? Should he chant it only at certain times and in certain conditions, or should he chant it constantly? You know, he didn't give him any instruction. Then later he came and gave some instruction. But you know, who it was that was the object of the mantra, that was also unknown. But there was something unspoken that was within him wanting that fulfilled. So many of us have a faint, foggy, unclear notion of the goal of life. You know, Vaikuntha, Krishna Loka, you know, what, even if we try to understand what that is, we'll use our material faculties to understand what that is. We're not going to truly understand what that is. But he was unsatisfied with whatever the situation was. And that's what continued, that's what propelled him to continue. Then another that's mentioned, Gopa Kumar specifically says that my spiritual master gave me something, and I would be ungrateful if I did not receive the fullness of that which he gave me. So not wanting to be ungrateful, he kept moving to receive the fullness, even not being clear what that fullness is, but a sense of the fulfillment of fullness was not there, although he was in Vaikuntha and Ayodhya and so many places, Dwarka. And in the material realm, never was satisfied. He was Lord Brahma for some time. Okay. Yes?
So, as you were talking about goals, I was thinking of Dhruva Maharaj. Because his goal was not... He had a material goal.
He had a mixed goal.
And then he had the association of a pure devotee, which then gave him the mercy to get the pure goal.
Yeah. But his mother, bless her heart, told Dhruva that in order to get your desire fulfilled, there's only one way that I know, and that's Lord Vishnu. So he just locked into that. Okay, I want to get to Lord Vishnu so I can fulfill my... So it became two things from one thing. Then Narada gave him the means to get Lord Vishnu's association. And in the process of the Tivra Bhakti that he performed, one displaced the other. It became just Vishnu. So from mixed, from material to mixed to fully spiritual by the mercy of his mother initially and then Narada. And his, you know, very intense absorption in the process given by Narada. Okay. Anything else? Yes?
In today's wonderful session, you mentioned that even those who are impersonalist and following even the other path of jnana and karma, unless they do some devotional service, the process that they are following is not complete. They
yes.
will not get that goal, whether it be impersonalism or whatever. So,
we don't commonly hear Prabhupada speak like that, but he spoke like that or wrote like that, and so I repeated it. Go ahead.
So, but I was just wondering, like, we have been so fortunate to get this process, and we know the various items and limbs of devotional service, those which that we try to perform.
Yes.
But these this category of people, they have no idea about what devotional service is.
That's right.
So that means all of them, none of them have reached their goal, or or how is it, how they are able to do some part of devotional service?
Well, their knowledge is incomplete, and therefore their application is incomplete, and therefore their attainment is incomplete. But their knowledge is something, and their process is something, and their attainment is something. Just incomplete. Now, we, on the other hand, have complete knowledge, but our application is incomplete. So, good luck. We need to apply ourselves increasingly better and better and better. But you know, your question specifically was about these other people. Prabhupada doesn't qualify. I'm sure that there are ways to further qualify. Let's say, by that I mean somebody that's just imagining something and somebody that's following a mixed process. And imagining something doesn't count as devotional service. But following something that's standard and having a misconception, an impersonal conception or a material conception, misconception, then of what the goal is and so forth. But the process that they're taking up is in some way, anyway, so there are subdivisions, I'm sure, going down and out and around. So he doesn't go there. He just says that bhakti yoga must be an element of that. Gyan Mishra Bhakti must have a bhakti element, otherwise they're not going to be able to get that attainment, and subdivisions under that. It's, again, it's not something that Prabhupada writes about commonly, so it's hard to elaborate. Even the topic is just coming from him and from Kapila Dev. But I'm sure there's subtleties that distinguish categories of bhakti and categories of imagined activity. Like these people that had their universal form sitting on a chair, and the head teacher coming over and whispering in my ear something. That's not a standard anything. It's impersonalism, and just making up something, and it's impersonalism. Okay. So anything else? Okay, then it's prasadam time. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.